I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening, and welcome to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Mary Izette, your co-host in this weekly journey of all things fermentable, live every Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on heritageradionetwork.org. We're archived on the website as well as iTunes and Stitcher. It's Monday, June 23rd. My co-host Chris Kuzme is at a benefit serving his delicious beer from 508 Gaster Brewery. And as some of you might be able to tell, I have a touch of laryngitis tonight. Luckily, I was able to visit a really special fermentation project last week called Fermentation on Wheels. So Tara has driven this bus, converted school bus, all across the country. And luckily, I was able to stop in and talk to her. Let's hear what she had to say. I'm here in the Fermentation on Wheels bus that is currently parked in Brooklyn, New York, with
Tara Whitsitt.
And Tara, you're originally from Eugene, or you're based in Eugene, Oregon now.
I am based in Eugene. So basically, I've been driving since October. I started in Eugene. I went as far south as San Diego, as far east as Savannah, Georgia, and then up the coast. And then I did one zig back in through Tennessee up to Kentucky, and then back to the coast. So I've been in the Northeast for a little over a month now, where I started like just west of D.C. in Purcellville, Virginia. And it's been really, really good. And I'm actually going to be based in the Northeast this winter, which I've just kind of started announcing. And then I'm going to continue my journey through the Midwest in the spring, and I'm aiming to get back home to Eugene, Oregon, midsummer of next year.
2015. Yeah. Awesome. So tell me a little bit about how you came up with this Fermentation on Wheels and your mission.
So Fermentation on Wheels came to me in a dream, which I thought was really funny at first, and you know, I wasn't like going to pursue it at all, but it was just this like lovely dream where I was driving around fermenting food, and I was already fermenting on a large scale at this point. I actually moved to Oregon so I could up my scale of production. I used to live in Brooklyn, where I was in a tiny space. So then, you know, I had this dream, and then I ended up having it two nights in a row after that. So I had it three nights in a row total. And I thought, wow, that's pretty powerful to have a dream three times in a row, because that's kind of, you know, that's so, like, your subconscious speaking to you. And then I was like, yeah, I don't know if I can do that. That's crazy. But maybe I'll just start writing. So I began writing about a project in which, you know, I'm in a bus, and the mission is to travel and try to build a community of people who have a genuine fascination and interest in traditionally preserved, local, delicious foods. And, yeah, and also teach about it, you know, bring these people together, whether it be through community workshops or fermented food-themed potlucks, I like to do vegetable fermentation workshops. I also do starter culture swaps. I have a huge collection of starter cultures. It's been kind of an obsession of mine since I started this journey, which I did not foresee, but I'm really happy about, because I have a lot of like little living guys right now that are, and they're all super unique, and I feel like that aspect of the project really celebrates uniqueness, and I think that's an important part of community too. So
definitely kind of terroir, right, as you go around.
Yeah.
So then after, so you started writing about this.
Yeah, so then my mission kind of just, you know, became more concrete, and I became very excited, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go shopping for a bus. I'm just going to do it. This was the second bus I looked at. The engine was immaculate, perfect shape. The exterior, the body, not so great, but then it had plumbing, electric, and propane already installed, and I was searching for something that had that, you know, had the input already of things I would pay for, other what pay contractors to do. I didn't want to invest in that. I kind of just like wanted it to be set up. And then the engine was super important, of course, because this is going to be a really long trip. So, yeah, it was the second bus I looked at, and I bought it, and I've been working on it since. That was in July, and then I started drawing the bus, and I made this logo, which probably a lot of people have seen if they've looked at my Facebook or website. So this was basically kind of like all of the images in my dream. And so when I bought the bus, I just, you know, started drawing it from life. I like wanted it to be rather exact. And then I finished this drawing maybe a month later. And I launched a Kickstarter. The Kickstarter was unsuccessful, which... at the time, I thought maybe it was sad, but I also thought it could be a good thing because now there are no limitations to how long I can spend, where I need to go. It's kind of, you know, it's becoming its own thing. It has legs of its own, and I'm by donation. I have a fiscal sponsorship now by an organization in New York City, which is another big reason why I want to stay in the Northeast a little longer, do a more in-depth regional tour so I can be close to them and really focus on fundraising and, you know, my nonprofit status as well.
So, cool.
Yeah.
And so then when did you... So you got the bus. It was pretty much ready to go from what it sounds like. So this was originally a school bus, right? And someone had converted it. So I'm just going to describe a little bit of... We'll have some photos on the Twitter feed as well, and then you can find them on your website as well as your Facebook page. But this is actually amazing. So I walked in, and you have a very large work counter, and there's all kinds of carboys at the bottom. There's a shelf that you said a friend made for you.
Yeah, so this fermentation station, it was a collaboration of a friend and me, Daniel Temple in Eugene, Oregon, who actually... converted a school bus into a woodworking shop, and we met at a very great farm party where I did a wine workshop, and he basically walked into the bus and saw that all of my carboys were on the floor and immediately said, "You cannot do that. You cannot leave." And it was like my 2 weeks before my departure date. And I said, I know, I can't do this. I don't know how I'm going to, but, you know, I got to do it because it's going to manifest, like something's going to happen, you know, it's going to happen. And he said, okay, well, do you have a vision? And then I described this. This was my vision. And he just so perfectly recreated. I mean, we worked together, but he basically came back 2 days later with this part, this part, this part, which he salvaged from his elementary school, this maple.
That's a maple wood top.
Mm-hmm. The legs. And he said, okay, get out all your jars. Let's do some measuring. And then we cut out the holes. And then he left me with it for a week. And I sanded everything and painted everything. He came back a week later and helped install it on the bus. So this is the sturdiest thing on the bus. It's actually attached from underneath So we went underneath the bus and screwed from below. And so, yeah, it's super sturdy.
And there's holes for everything. Like, there's carboy-sized holes that the carboys fit in. There's, you know, like, wine bottle-sized holes. There's your quart and half-gallon-sized holes. So everything sits in its place so it can't slide around.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about... You gave a workshop in Brooklyn on... Or no, in Manhattan on Monday.
I did. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And which was that workshop?
It was a kimchi workshop. And it was organized through... It was organized through the meetup mm-hmm. organization.
Yep. The NYC Ferments meetup.
NYC Ferments, right. And Michaela Hayes and Angela Davis, they helped set it up, which is actually really interesting. Angela, she had followed me when my Kickstarter was running and said, oh, I hope this, like, this happens. Get in touch with us. So if you're in New York, or get in touch with us if you come to New York. And so... You know, I did get very scrappy and made it happen, even though the Kickstarter didn't go through. So she was one of the first people I contacted. So we had that plan for a long time. It was at Jimmy's number 43 in the East Village. And yeah, it was fantastic. There were close to 40 people there. Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that you've done or with workshops and... Just community sharing.
So something I do a lot of, I do potlucks, and usually I'll have a workshop in a city, and the workshop options I have are fermenting by season, which is just, I'm at farms in between my urban places, okay. So I do a lot of farming and harvesting, and then I bring those veggies to the nearby city and, you know, talk about the story of the vegetables and the people that grew them, and then we ferment them. And it could be a variety of vegetables, like stuff that you know, maybe thought was not fermentable. And there's been a lot of cabbage this winter. It was a brutal winter, so there were a lot of root veggies and a lot of green cabbage, but... Definitely heavy on the root veggies, rutabaga, turnip, radishes. So, you know, good time for kimchis. I've been doing a lot of kind of creative kimchis, and garlic and onion still hasn't quite matured, so I've been doing a lot with young garlic and young onion, which I really like. And then my other workshop is called Get Cultured, and that's about the beauty of the starter culture, and it's their history, what they eat, a little bit of the science about them, and then those are usually followed by a swap. You can swap another culture, you can swap fermented food. I also accept donations, and I like to focus on, I'll take like three cultures for a class. So say sourdough starter, TB Coast, also known as water kefir, and then kombucha, just for example. And then, so I have multiple varieties of each of these. So we smell all of the varieties of each one and kind of discuss how unique each is, even within a species. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what is sourdough? How is it fed? What, you know, just general maintenance, so that if people want to bring these home and try them themselves, then they can. I often also make the food so people can try them. Sourdough, not as much. I do sourdough pancakes on the bus, but I don't have an oven.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot that you can do with sourdough culture besides bread, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about... So I see these are three sourdough cultures.
Mm-hmm.
So you have one at Brooklyn Rye.
Yeah.
Nola sourdough via Nashville.
Mm-hmm. So this sourdough originated in New Orleans 7 years ago. And this incredible bakery called Bella Nashville, they were using this sourdough, and I wanted their sourdough because their bread was so good, and so they gave this to me.
Awesome.
And then I've got an Alaskan sourdough that's 90 years old, which I acquired in Portland. So, yeah. They're each very much their own. The Brooklyn Rye, it's got the, like, the rye smell to it. You can smell these. Here's the rye.
Yeah, spicy, kind of like rye beer.
The Nola is kind of like a good medium starter. It's very, like, it's not too pungent, and it's good for just, like, straight sourdoughs. And then the Alaskan is kind of a creamier sourdough. It actually likes milk. Mm-hmm. And it's quite interesting. I like it a lot.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're all very different. I'd say they have some characteristics of obviously in common, but, yeah, very unique aromas. And
mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Have you found that they've changed, like, since you got the Alaskan sourdough? Has it evolved a little bit on its own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of them have, the sourdoughs especially. And I kind of feel like they're assimilating to one another, but... You know, what can you do? And
the nature of sourdough culture.
Yeah. The good thing is that I've given so many sourdough cultures that I can track any of these back to their original state if I really want. Because I know, I know all of the people who have I keep in touch with a lot of people from on the road, so.
Awesome.
It's a good thing.
And then you have water kefir over here. I'm just looking kind of on the top. So I also do water kefir and kombucha right now.
Oh, great. So these are not going to smell as strong because I'm working on them as we speak, just this past hour. This is my New Orleans tibicos.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really, really good. These are my three favorite tibicos I've found. A woman who came to my workshop, she gifted those to me in New Orleans. This is really special. This is from Arizona, and it was harvested near the source, so this comes from a cactus, actually, and it's like the culture grows beneath the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I stayed with a community that does a lot of foraging, and so... They gathered these, and so they're from very close to the Mexican border, and that cactus is native to Mexico. And I just fed this with cold-pressed coconut.
Yeah. Smells delicious.
Yeah, it's really, really special. It's got kind of a cheesy aroma.
That's what I was going to say. It almost has like a dairy milk quality to the aroma, but a little bit softer, I guess, or more...
Yeah. Yeah, so I love it. And this I got from my friends Megan and Shane, who have a business called Hex Ferments in Baltimore. They said they got this from Sander Katz, so I guess that's, pretty exciting.
The godfather of fermentation.
Yeah, but
oh, yeah, this smells like... Does this have ginger in it?
It has a bit of aroma of ginger. I fed it with ginger recently
Yeah. It's really nice.
Thanks.
Yeah. Those are each also very different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something I do a lot, so water kefir is super high maintenance, you probably know if you do it. I don't have refrigeration really. So my kind of go to what I do is I'll do like a molasses ginger combo. I'll throw in some sugar too, but molasses really gets grains going and
has a lot of nutrients.
Mm-hmm. It has a lot of nutrients. And then I'll add some herbs too, like licorice and maybe lavender. And then I can feed kombucha mothers and water kefir at the same time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I keep those guys happy.
And then you have, at least three kombuchas over here, right?
Yeah, so this is from Hex Ferments. This is their kombucha. They make amazing kombucha, and I've made some really good kombucha with this so far. So you can smell that.
Oh, yeah, that smells really nice.
Yeah. And this one I just did peppermint kombucha. You'll Ooh. Be able to smell it.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I've never made... That's going to go on my to-make list. This peppermint kombucha.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer. Because
it's so good. Yeah. It's my favorite in the summer. And mint grows so readily.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love mint and lemon balm together, too. They're just, they just grow. So, yeah. And this one's from Arizona. And it's another one of my favorites. I just love, the essence of the culture. And some of them are not, kombucha's a really good example, because I think that, it's more popular of the ferments that are cultured mm-hmm. and widely available. This one, for example, is kind of, just not as...
It's more single-noted.
It's more single-noted. Yeah, it's less complex, and mm-hmm. So I'm kind of I'm always seeking out kombucha cultures that are really interesting. It's something I really love to brew, and kombucha is one of my power foods.
Hello, do-it-yourselfer. Ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at bonnieplants.com.
And we're back with more from Tara.
Fermentation is the transformation of food in a raw cooked state to something that is microbe rich. So it's actually taking yeast from the air and the vegetable so that there are living organisms present in the food. And as a result, they also create create more complex flavors. Okay. So, pickles, not all pickles are fermented, but most ferments are pickles. So kimchi is fermented.
Okay.
And you've had kimchi before. It's got a deep, deep, interesting flavor to it. So this is 5 days old. The longer you ferment something, the more complex it becomes and the more microbial activity develops.
Okay.
So you can just pull it off with a fork. Yeah, try everything. This is kimchi, this is kohlrabi, this is an allium ferment, this is a carrot kraut that I made with hex ferments. They're selling it in their store now. It's turmeric and ginger.
What did you say this was?
It's young garlic, young onion, radishes and some greens. This is mint and daikon, which is a really nice fennel pollen and white pepper.
Oh, that's delicious.
And do you have a website where I can check out these recipes?
Yeah, I have quite a few recipes. I don't have all my recipes, but this is my website. It's just fermentationonwheels.com. This is Sizer, which is apple juice and honey fermented. I actually let the apple juice go hard so it becomes a weak cider, and then I add the honey and water and ferment it. And I do this every fall. So I actually started these in California back in late October.
Did you use just the natural yeast from the apples, or?
For the cider, I did add a champagne yeast.
Okay.
And my champagne yeast is a combination of commercial and yeast that I've cultivated over the years.
That's cool.
So, yeah, these are my sizers. Every fall I do them. I press the apples myself, which is something I just love to do. This is a mint lemon balm mead. I do a lot of herbal meads. This is something I've been doing in the summers that I really like. And it's ready to bottle. It's just a lot of work to bottle wine now that I'm moving so much. I've got blackberry maple cider, which is just like this, but then it's secondary fermented with maple. I've got plum, which I started in the fall in Oregon. I've got another mint lemon balm. I've got some pear cider, and I started a strawberry last week when I was in New Jersey. I went to a farm, cool. And they have strawberries. And then these little guys are actually just the, it's like the sludge from my racking, and I call them trucker wines, and they're just, you know, hodgepodge little guys that...
Awesome.
I have a few vinegars, too. Like, this is a vinegar. It's a ginger lemon nettle.
Oh, that smells amazing.
This is a grapefruit sage. Yeah, you know, I just love, like, I just love food. And I've always had a huge love affair with food. So it's like, I just love all the delicious things. And I love sharing them with people. So I was like, this is a really good setup for me to be able to do that. I live in a community at home of about 15 people, and we eat dinner together every night. We have a food share, and you know, I do like a lot of the food production as far as like larger ferments. I do a lot of bread baking, and you know, we all work together to put something in, but we have a lot of guests too. And it feels really good to have that living situation when, you know, and be able to do a lot of DIY stuff as well, because people are always eating and adding, and that's, you know, kind of what I get to do on the bus traveling around the country now, and it's meant to be that way. Like, I want to continue that lifestyle.
Thanks for listening to Femen About It on heritageradionetwork.org. I hope that you guys are as inspired by Tara and her fermentations as much as I have been. It was truly a pleasure to visit her bus. Please check out her website, and if she is in your area, make an effort and go see. It's really an amazing project and full of all kinds of awesome, tasty goodness. I really look forward to her return in September. So again, thanks for listening. Next Monday night, we are headed to a Brooklyn Bruisers meeting, which is one of our local homebrew clubs that meets at Browery Lane in the Greencoin neighborhood of Brooklyn. They had a club competition of sour beers, and we interviewed a bunch of the guys who made sour beers, from first timers to experienced. I think you'll get a lot of tips on turning sour. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.